Morning, good. Today's Daf and Erevin, Chav Gimel. We start today in the Mishnah, Chav Beis Amud Beis. And one more Mishnah having to do with Pasei Beirah, second parak of Erevin. And our topic of discussion since the beginning of the parak, although taking us all the way back to Yizayin Amud Beis. So the Mishnahs have been dealing with the issue of Pasei Beirah. And obviously the Gemara has been commenting on that as well. Pasei Beirah is basically the brackets that are put in for the Olei Regalim. When you're making Aliyah L'Regel and you're stopping on the way for Shabbos, so it is just going to be necessary to stop by a water source and be able to get the water out of the well and be able to drink the water, or more accurately, to water your animals. So what is allowed to do under those circumstances is create a makeshift reshus yachid around the well. How do you do that? By putting four brackets around the four corners, each bracket going an am in each direction. And basically, now you're creating an outline of a square, and that is how you're creating a reshus yachid for that Shabbos. We already spoke about in the beginning of the perek how this is an unusual reshus yachid. They're not real walls. You don't have amud merubah laparutz, but nevertheless, it serves as walls, and it functions as a reshus hayachid. And so over the course of this perek, we've been dealing with the details of Pasei Beirah. What else could it be used for? So there was a Rashi, really a Gemara, but Rashi made it clear that it could be used also if you're traveling from one yeshiva to another. Meaning Aliyah L'Regel is an example. And another example would be traveling to yeshiva. That was Rashi and Chafal from Adalef, where there Rashi says that a dugma, an example, would be in Bavel, where they would be traveling from yeshiva to yeshiva. So there you can employ also the concept of Pasei Beirah. Is there any other example where you could use it? So we haven't yet found it. Those are the only two examples that we see for sure that you could use this mechanism of Pasei Beirah. With that stated, we are going to continue now in the Mishnah on Chav Beis Amud Beis. The Mishnah starts off, Echad bor rabim obeir rabim, obeir yachid osin lehem pasin. So when can I use the mechanism of Pasei Beirah? So when there's a water source in the middle, and it has to have one of two things. Well, first of all, let's make the distinction we already did between a bor and a be'er. A bor is a pit. It's just a hole in the ground. It collects the rainwater. A be'er is a natural wellspring. The be'er, the water is going to keep going through and keep providing because it's a natural wellspring, as opposed to a bore, which has a finite amount. The other distinction, which the Mishnah over here is dealing with, is whether it's owned by the public or whether it's owned by a private individual. What makes it better? What makes it worse? So when it comes to be'er, so be'er is better. Why is a be'er better? Because you're not going to run out of water. So therefore, there's more reason to allow the Pasei Beirah for a be'er, because you know that the water is going to be in constant supply. What's better? Is it Rabim or Yachid better? Rabim is better. Why? Because if in the event the water does run out, so each one of them is going to remind each other that the only allowance that we have to use the brackets, the Pasei Beirah, is only because of the water. Once the water is gone, so we can't use it anymore. And once there are many people that are there, they're going to remind one another. So a Be'er is better than a Bor, halachically, and Rabim is better than a Yachid, halachically. So with that stated, now let's start the Mishnah anew. Let's start it again. Echad bor harabim, be'er harabim. So when it comes to a public pit or a public well, so that's fine. Ube'er a yachid, oselam pasin. And even if it's an individual's well, but it was a wellspring, it's a be'er, so then you are allowed to use the brackets. Aval lebor hayachid. But if it's just an individual and it's a pit, so now you have what Rashi describes as tarta l'reyusa. So now you have two strikes against you. So number one, it's a pit, not a well. Number two, it's owned by an individual, not a group. So now, oslo mechitza gavo yutzfachim div Rabbi Akiva. So according to Shitas Rabbi Akiva, so with these two strikes against you, so you cannot use the mechanism of Pasei Beirah. Now you have to make actual walls in order to facilitate carrying in that area. Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, omer ein osim pasin, ela ver harab milvad. Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava is more machmir. He says that the only time you could use a mechanism of Pasei Beirah is only when you have tarte letova. Only when it's a wellspring and it's by the public. Lashar osin chagura gavor asar tfachim. But for everything else, so you need to make chagura. Now, chagura literally means a belt. In fact, I'll get back to the Rashi in just a moment. But the simple pshat in the Mishnah is, now you have to make bona fide walls. It's no longer a well, it's now a pit. Or it's a well owned by an individual. So according to Rav Yehuda ben Bava, even with one strike against you, so you cannot use the mechanism of Pasei Beirah. And now you have to make bona fide mechitzas. Now, it's interesting that Rav Yehuda ben Bava has a funny word to describe walls. He calls it a chagura. He calls it a belt. In fact, it gets even funnier because if you look at Rashi on the Mishnah, Rashi describing a chagura, Rashi describes it as hekef shel chavala. So Rashi is going back to what we learned at the end of the first parak, and Rashi is talking about the horizontal ropes that you tied around, three of them, all within three tefachim of one another, and thereby creating a wall using the principle of lavud. That's what Rashi seems to be saying over here. It's a little bit funny that we're invoking that over here, when in fact what you need is bona fide walls. However, in defense of Rashi, the Mishnah for Rav Yehuda ben Bava is using a strange term. It's using the term chagura, which means a belt. However, if you look at that bottom Tosos on the Amud, chagura, perish mechitza. So Tosos says that with chagura in the Mishnah means a mechitza. It's a little bit strange why the Mishnah is using such a word to describe mechitzas, but that's Tosos' understanding. And so is Tosos arguing with Rashi? Quite possibly. But the simpler way to read the Mishnah is like Tosos, that Rav Yehuda ben Bava, when you have one strike against you, requires an actual wall. We're now starting with the Gemara on the top of Chav Gimel Amud Aleph. I'm Rav Yosef, I'm Rav Yehuda, I'm Rav Shmuel, Lachik Rav Yehuda ben Bava. So in our Mishnah, so the halacha in fact follows like Rav Yehuda ben Bava, that you need walls if you have even just but one strike against you. Either it's a boar or it's a be'er shal yachid. If it's one strike against you, you need actual walls. And that's the halacha, says the Gemara. V'am Rav Yosef, I'm Rav Yehuda, I'm Rav Shmuel, lahush pasi be'eros, ala be'er mayim chayim bavan. And then another statement that was said by the same Baal Memra, Rav Yosef, in the name of Rav Yehuda, in the name of Shmuel, is that the only time that you can use pasi be'eros is only when you have spring water, and it can't be a pit. Now, Utsricha, now the Gemara says, now that second point seems to be an extraneous point. Once you're paskin like Rav Yehuda ben Bava, so we get it. So in other words, it has to be a be'er. That second halachic statement seems to be a redundancy, and the Gemara says, no, it's necessary. The Iyash min halachic Rav Yehuda ben Bava, because if we only had the first statement, so who have I mean, I might have thought to Rav Me'afilu Mechunasim, so I might have thought that the key aspect is that it has to be owned by the public. And V'hai Diktani Be'er HaRabim, and the fact that it's true, Rav Yehuda ben Bava says the word Be'er, but that's only La'afukim in the Rabbi Akiva. But that was only to preclude ourselves from the position of Rabbi Akiva. Meaning he was only responding to Rabbi Akiva, but really the key factor is going to be the Be'er Shel Rabim. And it could be a boar as long as it's a Shel Rabim. That's the Havamina. So Kamash Malan, Delo Hutra, Pasi Be'eros, Ala Be'er Mayim Chaim. And so therefore the second statement is there to tell us that no, Be'er Mayim Chaim is a critical component. It has to be a wellspring. And now V'iyash Mina Be'er Mayim Chaim, Havamina, Loshna D'Rabim, Loshna D'Yachid, Kamash Malan, Halachik Rav Yehuda Ben Bava. And also, if I only had the second point of Be'er Mayim Chaim, so I might have thought that it wouldn't make a difference whether it belonged to the public or whether it belonged to an individual. Meaning the halachic statement, the second halachic statement, just focuses on Be'er Mayim Chaim. I would not necessarily have known that the fact that it's owned by Rabim also becomes a critical component, and that's why he invokes that the halacha falls to Rav Yehuda ben Bava. So basically, with these two halachic statements of Rav Yosef, I'm Rav Yehuda, I'm Shmuel, we arrive at the conclusion that both of these components are critical, and you need both it to be a be'er, and on top of that, you need to be shel rabim. Then and only then could you use pasi be'eros. Okay, that kind of takes us to the end of the Mishnah, and basically to the end of the topic of pasi be'eros. Obviously, we're still here in the second parak of the Masechta, and another four more dapim to go until we finish the second parak, and here we begin the discussion regarding karpaf. Now, karpaf we touched on already earlier, but now we get to discuss karpaf in more detail. And the idea is as follows. In order to have a Rishus Yachid, what do you need? An enclosure. It's actually pretty straightforward. As long as you have an enclosure made up of at least three walls, possibly a fourth wall, but as long as you have an enclosure, so what you have now is a Rishus Yachid. What about the size of the Rishus Yachid? It really doesn't matter. Again, right now we're just dealing with the Dinda Oraisa. It really doesn't matter. You can have the enclosure as long as you want, as long as it's an enclosure. So what you're looking at is a Rishus Yachid. Nevertheless, as we're going to be seeing together in our Mishnah, in order for a Rishus Yachid to work, not only on a Daraisa level, but on a Darabana level, in order to be able to carry within the Rishus Yachid area, so it has to be an area that was Hukaf Ladira. It has to have been enclosed for the purposes of residence. And only when it was made residential, it was zoned that way. From the time that the enclosure was made, only at that point in time can I carry in that area. If it is in a Hukaf Ladira, however, if it's a non-residential area, so even though the Torah recognizes the Rishus Yachid, nevertheless, there's going to be rabbinic legislation. Under certain circumstances, you won't be able to carry in that area if it is in a Hukaf Ladira. Now, what we're going to be discussing in the course of our Mishnah is what exactly are going to be that rabbinic legislation in terms of the limitations of using such an area that's non-residential in nature. So this is going to be the discussion of the Mishnah. The Mishnah, really, what we're going to do is we're going to break up the Mishnah into three different segments, even though The Mishnah really in its entirety is discussing this very topic, but we're basically going to break up the Mishnah into threes. Part number one of the Mishnah. The Odama Rav Yehuda ben Bava, and Rav Yehuda ben Bava made an additional statement. Now the Vod over here is obviously going back to the previous Mishnah, meaning in the previous Mishnah we just dealt with Rav Yehuda ben Bava. So now the Gemara wants to tell us another statement that was made by Rav Yehuda ben Bava. The Gemara is going to spend a little bit of time why necessarily had the Mishnah had to word, add the word va'od, meaning obviously it's another statement. We're going to come back to that word va'od, and when we start with the Gemara. Va'od amar Rav Yehuda ben Bava, hagina va'akarpav shehen shivim amma v'shirayim, ha'shivim amma v'shirayim. So if I have this karpav, so a karpav is a description of an enclosed area that typically is not residential. So if it is 70 and shirayim, shirayim literally means just a remnant. 70 and shirayim is 70 and two-thirds amma. 72-thirds amma, by 72-thirds amma, hamu kefetz geder, gavo asar tfachim, that is enclosed with a fence 10 tfachim high, meaning a bona fide wall, mitaltam besocha. So you're allowed to carry within that area, uvavachi eba, shomira, obeisira, oshite smucha le'ira, provided that it has something in it, either a shomira, some sort of guardhouse, or beisira, some sort of residence, or it has to be proximate to the city. Then and only then can I carry within that enclosure. According to Rav Yehuda ben Bava, when I have the karpov of this area, the square area of 72-thirds, which is 5,000 square amas. Now that's not precise, and the math we're gonna cover in just a little bit. But basically it's 5,000 square amas. So according to Rav Yehuda ben Bava, you still cannot carry in that area unless it was also, to a certain degree, residential in nature. I have a guardhouse in there. I have a actual house in there. Or it's proximate to the city. If you take a look at that first Rashi, on the Shita of Yehuda ben Bava Shomi Ra, Rashi writes, Sukkah Shomrim, it's a guardhouse. And Rashi writes over here, let's focus on the Rashi. Alpha Gav Dehukaf Ladira, Besa Saimhu, Deshari Tfei Lo. Even though it is residential, Rashi says the Shita of Yehuda ben Bava is a very stringent position, meaning that even when it is residential, you're still going to be capped in that you cannot carry in such an area any time that it's greater than 72-thirds by 72-thirds. Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava is effectively saying that every area is going to have a cap in it, and the only time I can carry an enclosed area is if it is within 5,000 square amas, and to a certain degree it's residential. Not perfectly clear in Shitas Rashi that Rav Yehuda ben Bava would apply this to every single residential area. Meaning, over here we're talking about quasi-residential areas. There's a guardhouse in there. It's proximate to the city. And by the way, Rashi writes when it's by proximate to the city, that because it's proximate to the city, so therefore it is going to be used to a certain degree of residence. It's not perfectly clear if Rav Yehuda ben Bava is saying this by any residential area or only the pseudo-residential areas that we're describing in our Mishnah. But anyway, what we can say definitively is that Rav Yehuda ben Bava over here is reflecting a very stringent position, meaning even though it's clear that there is some usage of this enclosed area, and I'll add residential usage of this area, nevertheless, there's still going to be a cap in which if it is greater than 72-thirds by 72-thirds, I cannot carry in that area. Again, I just want to emphasize, the Torah recognizes the Rishus Yachin, it's just that the Chachamim legislated that once it's greater than 72-thirds, and even, according to Rav Yehuda ben Bava, even if I have a guardhouse or anything of residence in there, I still cannot carry in that area rabbinically. Rav Yehuda Omer, afilo ein ba'el abor v'siach u'ma'ara metaltam basocha. Now Rav Yehuda is slightly more lenient, and he says that, look, even if it has some sort of well source, it's got a pit or a cave, so that's enough to allow carrying in that area. That's Shitas Rav Yehuda. And Rabbi Kiva Omer, afilo ein ba, achas mikol eila, metaltam besocha v'avachi eba, shivam amma v'shirayim, ha'shivam amma v'shirayim. Shitas Rabbi Kiva is, even if it is totally non-residential, there is nothing in there. There's not a guardhouse, there's not a pit, there's nothing residential about it. As long as it's an enclosed area, and it's totally non-residential, anything up to 72-thirds one is allowed to carry. Anything greater than 72-thirds squared, one is not allowed to carry. So far in the Mishnah, we have three shitas amongst the Tanaim. Exactly when is there going to be rabbinic legislation on non-residential areas? Shitas Rav Yehuda ben Bava takes the most stringent position, is that even with some residential purpose, still anything greater than 72-thirds I can't carry inside. Rav Yehuda, relaxes a little bit in terms of what there needs to be inside that area, a pit, a cave. And according to Shita's Rabbi Akiva, even if it is totally non-residential, there is nothing in that enclosed area, and it wasn't zoned for residence. According to Shita's Rabbi Akiva, up to 72/3 squared you can carry, anything greater you cannot carry. That is, let's call that section number one of the Mishnah. Now we're up to section number two. And that is going to be the shape of this area. Rabbi Eliezer Omerim Haisa Aruka Yesra Rachla Afilama Achas Ein Metalkim Besocha. The simple way to read Rabbi Eliezer, it has to be square. Meaning anytime it becomes now rectangular, where the length is greater than the width, so then it's no longer a square, and therefore you cannot carry in that area. So the shape, of says Rabbi Eliezer, is it has to be square. That's a simple reading of Rabbi Eliezer. When we get to the Gemara, we are going to change our understanding of Rabbi Eliezer. Stay tuned, it's coming up later today. Rabbi Yose Omer, Afilu Aruka Pishnaim Berachva, Metaltim Besocha. Even if, let's say, the length is 2x and the width is x, you could still carry in that area, meaning it could be rectangular. And the length being two times greater than the width, nevertheless, you're allowed to carry in that area. So what Rabbi Yossi allows for is a rectangular shape. It does not have to be a square shape. Okay. And that we'll call now section number two of the Mishnah. And finally, the third section of the Mishnah, Amar Rabbi Elisha Matimi Rabbi Eliezer. In our Mishnah, we have the word Elazar. It's probably Eliezer. So Rabbi Eli says that I heard from Rabbi Eliezer Vafilu Kebes Kor, that even if the area is Kebes Kor, in other words, there's no cap. Rabbi Eli says, I heard Rabbi Eliezer express such a position, that there is no cap, there is no limit, an enclosure of any size, even non-residential, you're allowed to carry in that area. A kor is 30 sa'a. The shivim vishirim that we've been discussing up until now, which totals approximately 5,000 square amas, is 2 sa'a. So if you have an area of 30 sa'a, that's 15 times larger. So he heard, Rabbi Eli heard that from Rabbi Eliezer, even if it's this size, you could still carry in that area. And then another statement that he heard from Rabbi Eliezer, let's say somebody did not contribute to the Eruv. So somebody did not contribute to the Eruv, so it would be forbidden for the members of the Chatzir to take, it would be forbidden for him to take any kalim out of his house into the chatzer. Now, I'm not going to focus on this right now, even though it's part of the Mishnah. It's just simply not our topic. It's not really the point of today's daf, but it's the second thing you heard from Rabbi Eliezer. I'll say it over quickly. Later in the Masechta, we're going to spend a lot more time on this. If somebody doesn't contribute to the Eruv, so that becomes now a big problem. The whole point of the Eruv is unification, and every member of the chatzer has to contribute to the Eruv. If somebody does not contribute to the Eruv, so now what he's done is that now he has blocked unification. Is there a way to resolve that problem on Shabbos itself? Meaning on Shabbos itself, it's too late to contribute. So what you're going to do on Shabbos is what's called bittul reshus. We'll talk more about it later in the Masechta. I'm just using the right terminology right now. And that is that he'll just simply nullify his rights to his part of the chatzer. And now the chatzer is going to be used only by the remaining members of the chatzer. Under those circumstances, now his house becomes off limits. And I heard from Shita's Rabbi Eliezer that now for this Shabbos, so you cannot bring things in and out of his house, but only his things cannot be brought in and out of his house. Avalahem mutter. But for the other members of the chatzer, they could bring things in and out of his house. This is a controversial point. We're going to speak more about it later in the Masechta. Anyway, that's the second thing you heard from Rabbi Eliezer. Well, before I get to the Chazarti. And the third thing that Rabbi Eli says, I heard from Rabbi Eliezer, is that you could use arkavlin. What is arkavlin? So it's a type of vegetable. It's a bitter herb. Rashi describes it as just simply a subspecies of maror. So it's not one of the five. So you go to Pesachim and you go to Daf, I think Lamed Ches or Lamed Tes. So, I'm looking now on the side. Lamites. Okay. So you go to Pesachim Daf Lamites. So the Mishnah over there introduces us to the five different herbs that you could use for maror. Parenthetically, of the five, we know what two of them are. Or at least we think, we're pretty sure what two of them are. But anyway, lettuce and horseradish. But anyway, so there was another species that was mentioned over there, arkavlin. Not mentioned in the Mishnah. Rabbi Eli says that I heard from Rabbi Lezer that it's okay. It's okay to use such an herb. And so, now Rabbi Eli, on these three statements that he heard from Rabbi Eliezer, Chazarti al kol tamidav. Now I went around for the students of Rabbi Eliezer, u'bikashti lichaver, and I'm looking for corroboration. Has anyone else heard Rabbi Eliezer say this? v'lo matzasi, and I didn't find it. Nobody else can corroborate these statements that I heard from Rabbi Eliezer. So basically, I think I heard it, but no one corroborates, so I'm not so sure. And I'm not so sure if he even said it. Meaning, Rashi describes over here, ubikashli chaver l'shosha dvarim halalu im shamam mipiv. In other words, did anyone hear Rabbi Eliezer say this? And I couldn't find anyone else who said it, so I don't have anyone to corroborate what I think I heard, says Rabbi Eli. Okay, ad kan divrei ha-mishnah. So in the Mishnah over here, we first discussed any kind of limitation in terms of a non-residential area, in terms of the limits of its square area. Then the Mishnah went on to discuss the shape of such an area and whether or not that becomes significant in terms of rabbinic legislation. And then finally, the statements of Rabbi Eliezer that's reported by Rabbi Eli, but even then Rabbi Eli acknowledges that he heard it, but he didn't find anyone who corroborated those statements. And the first of those statements having to do with our discussion, in that he heard Rabbi Eliezer say that there is no cap and there's no limit to what is going to be the square area of an enclosed area. An enclosed area of any size, even up to a core, one would be allowed to carry in such an area. Okay, ad kan divrei ha-mishnah, and now it allows us to begin the Gemara. The Gemara is going to be spending the rest of our first amud over here on the word va'od. Our Mishnah introduces the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava with the word va'od. My tani dekani va'od. So why is Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava saying the word va'od? Or why is the Mishnah, the Mesadr Mishnah is, let's call it Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, why is he introducing Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava with the word va'od? So the Gemara says, well, it's pretty simple explanation, and it has to do with the previous Mishnah. In the previous Mishnah, now it's not the same topic. In the previous Mishnah, we were talking about Pasei Beraus, and under what circumstances could I use Pasei Beraus? So Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava was expressing an opinion, and specifically a more chamor position. And so in our Mishnah over here, so Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava is also expressing a chamor position, not having to do with Pasei Beraus, now having to do with the regulations of a Karpuf, but nevertheless, it's a more chamor position. So Va'od means, and let me tell you another more stringent position that was espoused by Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. So the Gemara says that's a pretty simple explanation. So v'ha Rabbi Yehuda detana le'echad al-chomer v'ktani achrita v'lo ktani v'od. So the Gemara says, yeah, but it's not really precedented. So the Gemara says, I'll give you an example, and we don't have to go to another Masechta. In a moment, we will go to another Masechta, but we could say right here in Erevin. Right here in Erevin. So we have the Shitas of Rabbi Yehuda that were basically one after another. The statement to Rabbi Yehuda that we saw earlier happens to be even in our perek. Earlier in our perek was the limits of Pasei Beraus. Is Pasei Beraus doesn't have any type of limitation. Shitas Rabbi Yehuda is that, yes, it does. Meaning that your Pasei Beraus cannot be made any greater than 5,000 square amos. Now, let's not confuse, by the way. That discussion was regarding Pasei Beraus, but still, you can't you can't make Pasei Beraus greater than 5,000 square amos. On top of that, and then Rabbi Yehuda, the next topic of discussion in the Mishnayos was what happens when I have traffic going through my Pasei Beraus. So Rabbi Yehuda there says that's a problem, and the traffic is going to negate the walls. And so what we found now is back-to-back shitas of Rabbi Yehuda, not Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, but still, we had back-to-back shitas of Rabbi Yehuda, and they were both more stringent positions. And the Baal HaMishnayos, the Mesadr HaMishnayos, Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, when putting these two sheets side by side, did not put the extension of the word va'od. So in the very same perek, so we find that Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, when organizing the Mishnayos, was seemingly not consistent. In our Mishnah, when stringing together the position of Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, so he strung it together with the word va'od. But meanwhile, earlier in the perek, when introducing us to two points of Rabbi Yehuda, did not use the word va'od. So the Gemara says, yes, you're right, but I could see a difference between the two examples. Hasam afsaku rabbanan, hachalo afsaku rabbanan. So the Gemara says, well, if you go back to the discussions of Rabbi Yehuda, the points of Rabbi Yehuda, there was an interruption in between, specifically of the shita of the Chachamim. So that interruption prevented Rabbi Yehuda Anasi to put the word va'od there. Over here, there was no interruption. Meaning, if you look at the end of the previous Mishnah, which we started off our morning, it ended with the Shita Rav Yehuda ben Bava. The next Mishnah, the one we just did, starts with the Shita Rav Yehuda ben Bava. There's no hefsek. And because there's no hefsek, so now it's fair to introduce it with the word v'od. Okay, so it's technical, admittedly, but there is a distinction to be made. So the Gemara says, okay, v'chol hechad afsikur rabban lo ketani v'od. So is this all going to be true throughout? And now let's take a look at the gamut of Mishnayos and see if this is always going to be the case. And the Gemara says, and I found one. I found a scenario where there was no hefsek, and yet the word va'od was not used. Ha'a Rebbe Eliezer de Sukkah, the Afsiku Rabbanan, sorry, other way around. There was an example in Shas Mishnayos where there was the hefsek, and still the word va'od was used. Ha'a Rebbe Eliezer de Sukkah, the Afsiku Rabbanan v'ketani, va'od. So what about the Mishnayos in Sukkah in the second parak of Sukkah? So 2 points that were expressed by Rebbe Eliezer. One, everything I'm saying, by the way, you can find in Rashi. Rashi, Divrei Maschil, Rebbe Eliezer, the Sukkah. So one sheet of Rebbe Eliezer has to do with how many meals one's supposed to eat in the Sukkah. So we know the halacha is that we're obligated only to eat one meal in the Sukkah, and then the rest of our eating on Sukkahs is optional. And we don't have to eat in the Sukkah. Obviously, there is a mitzvah to do so, but it's not a mitzvah chiyuvi. We're not obligated to do so. Shitas Rebbe Eliezer is that you have to have 14 meals in the sukkah, two a day. Okay, and by the way, you look at the Mishnah over there in the Mefarshim Mishnah. What about the fact that Shabbos is going to be one of those 7 days of sukkahs, and on Shabbos you need not two meals, but rather you need three meals? Okay, I just off the top of my head I remember that being a discussion and various solutions to that problem. But anyway, so that Shitas Rebbe Eliezer over there that you have to have 14 meals. And then the Mishnah introduced the Shita of the Chachamim. The Chachamim say that's not correct. You don't have to have 14 meals. Rather, you only are obligated to eat that first night in the Sukkah. After that, it's just voluntary. It's a mitzvah kiyumi. It's not a mitzvah chiyuvi. And then the next Mishnah, Va'od Amar Rebbe Eliezer. And Rebbe Eliezer says that if you did not eat in the Sukkah on the first night, so you have Tashlumim. You can make it up at a later point in time. So that idea of tashlumim that's expressed by Rebbe Eliezer in the Mishnayos and Sukkah, so that is another stringent point of Rebbe Eliezer. I don't know if you could really call it a stringency, but whatever. It's another position, Rebbe Eliezer, and it's coupled with, it's introduced with the word va'od, and there was hefsek, meaning you had Rebbe Eliezer about the 14 meals, then you had the Chachamim arguing, and then you had another point of Rebbe Eliezer. So we have a break in the action. And yet the Mishnah uses the words va'od. And the Gemara was trying to argue moments earlier that if there's a break in the action, so you don't get to say the word va'od. So the Gemara, again, this is a very technical Gemara. So Hasam, the Gemara says, yeah, that's true, but over there, b'milsa hu dafsiku. Hacha b'milsa achrita afsikua. So the Gemara says, yeah, but over there, the hefsek was b'milsa, meaning it was on topic. And so since the hefsek was on topic, so therefore, you had the right to use the word va'od. But over here, it went on to a different topic, and so since it went on to a different topic, so therefore, in our Mishnayos, in the first part of our Perek, in the positions of Rav Yehuda, it was a hefsek and it was on to a new topic. That's why we didn't use the word va'od. Okay, so admittedly, an extraordinarily technical Gemara over here, in terms of when the word va'od is used to string together positions, when it's not used, and the Gemara tried to create some sense and reason in terms of when the word va'od is employed and when it's not employed. Okay. Obviously, in terms of a conceptual point the Gemara is trying to make, is that when you look at topics that are related versus topics that are unrelated, meaning those 2 points of Rebbe Eliezer and the Mishnah Sukkah, the Gemara clearly describes as being related points. And so when you go back to that Mishnah Sukkah, so now at least we're sensitive to the idea that the 14 meals and the tashlumim are not disjointed points, but rather they're related points. Okay, anyway, we are now continuing Rebbe Kiva. We're on the bottom of Chaf Gimel Amud Aleph. And Rebbe Kiva Omer, Afilu Ein Ba'echa Mikol Eila Metaltza Masocha. So in the Mishnah, first we talked about to what degree this Karpov has to be residential in order to allow carrying in that area. And Shitas Rebbe Kiva, which is the most lenient position, is that it doesn't have to have anything inside. Meaning a totally non-residential area with nothing inside, still you can carry in that area, albeit it can only be as a large an area of 5,000 square amas. It can't be any larger than that. So what the Gemara now points out is that, we haven't gotten to the Gemara's point yet. We are now on the top of the Amud Beis, and now we're going to get to the Gemara's point. Rebbe Kiva Hainu Tanakama. So the Gemara says, you know, Rebbe Kiva, so he's repeating what we already heard earlier. Now, when I say earlier, I mean earlier in the Perek. Meaning, if you go back to the beginning of the Perek and that Pasei Beros discussion, where Rabbi Yehuda says you can't make Pasei Beros larger than a Beis HaSayim, so Amru Lo, so there was a response to Rabbi Yehuda by a collection of Chachamim, of Tanaim, and they said to him, no, that's by Gina, that's by Karpov. There you're capped at a Beis HaSayim. But by the Pasei Beiros, you're not capped. So what is Rabbi Kiva doing in our Mishnah? He's reiterating the position of the Amru Lo. Now, it's interesting because the Amru Lo was not formally discussing Karpov. Our Mishnah is formally discussing Karpov. But still, the Gemara feels that Rabbi Kiva is doing nothing more than repeating what we already knew was a Shita. And not just a Shita, but the Shita of the collective Chachamim. So that's why the Gemara is bothered. Rabbi Kiva Hainu Tanakama. So Rabbi Kiva is repeating what the Tanakama already said. So Ika Beinau, so the Gemara says there is but just a subtle difference between the Amru Lo and Rabbi Kiva. And that is, Davar Mu'at, the time Rabbi Yehuda Amr, Davar Mu'at Yesh, Al Shivim Amma Vishirayim Velonastu Chachamim Boshir, Vikamashir Sasayim Bechatzer HaMishkan, Kechatzer HaMishkan. So the Gemara says that the subtle difference between the Shita of Rabbi Kiva and the Amru Lo is going to be the difference between 70 and 2/3 squared versus a Beis HaSayim. And now we're getting to the math. And we got a little bit of math to look forward to in the remainder of today's daf. So first, the subtle distinction. If I took 70 and 2/3 and I squared it, so what is the area inside? So I did the math. So it comes out to 4,993.7 square amos. So it's just a shade under 5,000. Okay, 6 and change less than 5,000 square amos. So when you express the Karpov, where its limits can only be Shivim Vishirayim squared, so then that means to say that you're capping it at not at 5,000, but you're capping it a little bit under 5,000. If, however, you're expressing the area with the words Beis HaSayim, so then you're allowing for 5,000 square amos. Why 5,000 square amos? Because that was the Chatzar HaMishkan. Chatzar HaMishkan was 50 by 100, which is obviously 5,000 square amos. So that's going to be the difference between the two positions. It is a really small difference, but yet it is a difference. Minahani Mila, the Gemara says, now how do I arrive at this conclusion? So how do I get to 70 and 2/3? Meaning the 5,000 square amos, so that's easy to arrive at because it's just taking the area of the Mishkan and figuring out what it is, 50 by 100. It's 5,000. But how do we ever get to 70 and 2/3? So Minahani Mila, Amar of Yehuda, Amar Kra, Orecha Chatzer, Mea Ba'ama, V'rachav Chamishim B'chamishim. So when the Torah expresses the area of the Chatzer, so the Torah has a funny language. The Torah says that it's 100 in length, and in terms of its width, 50 and 50. Well, what does that mean, 50 and 50? That's a funny language. Meaning you could just simply articulate the area by simply saying 100 by 50. Why does the Torah say 100 by 50 and 50? So Amr Torah, so what the Torah is alluding to is Tol Chamishim V'Saveiv Chamishim. That what you're going to do is you're going to take 50 and you're going to wrap it around 50. Now, what does that mean? So you can see a really lengthy Rashi over here. And if you have a picture that you're looking at, it's just going to be so much easier than to navigate through the Rashi. Right? The picture over here basically describes as follows. Now, I'm going to just give a quick synopsis of what Rashi is describing over here. And I'm going to paint a picture, right, in our minds. And that is the idea that we're going to do the following. We're gonna take the Chatzar HaMishkan and we're gonna divide in half. So now we have a square of 50 by 50. Obviously that leaves for us now a swatch of 50 by 50. Now what we're gonna do is that we're gonna cut into strips of 10 by 50. We're gonna take four of those strips and we're gonna wrap it around the square. Good. And then now that what that does is that it gives me a area of 70 by 70, but obviously it's incomplete because we don't have the corners. We're gonna take our fifth strip. And what we're going to do is we're going to cut it into squares of 10 by 10. We're going to take four of them, we're going to put them in the corners. And now what we have is a square of 70 by 70. Now the problem is that we're left with one swatch of 10 by 10. So what we're going to do is that we're going to divide that even into further strips. We're going to wrap those strips around, and now it's going to be 70 2/3 and 70 2/3. The numbers work. If you have a picture, you can see it in front of you in a picture. So basically, by taking the second square of our Mishkan and cutting it and wrapping it around, it's like a project in school, and wrapping it around, you're going to get to 70 2/3. And that's alluded to in the Torah. Now, that's not the simple pshat in the Torah, but nevertheless, we are teasing it out based on the fact that the Torah describes in such an unusual manner. Now, the Gemara says, okay, good. That's the drasha. The Gemara says, what's the pshat of the pasuk? Pashli the krab in Mike Siv. I'm Rabbi Yehem and Mishkan Asfas Chamishim Kedei Sheyei Chamishim Am Lefanav Ve'esrim Lechol Ruach Veruach. So in terms of what the simple pshat in the Torah is, in terms of the Chatzar HaMishkan, why does the Torah say Chamishim BeChamishim? So what the Torah is driving at is in terms of where I'm putting the actual Mishkan within the Chatzer HaMishkan. The Chatzer HaMishkan we know is an area of 50 by 100. Great. Now we're going to take the Mishkan itself, the edifice, and place it where we're putting inside. So of course, it could simply be that it's Torah Shebaal Peh, meaning part and parcel of the Masorah is where to put it. But in the simple Pshat in the Pasuk, the Torah is alluding to the fact that where I'm going to put it is going to be 50 amas from the entrance, being on the east side. So what we're going to do now is we're going to have an area, an empty area of 50 amos, now going from east to west, and only from that point going forward westbound, then we're going to put the chatzer, the actual Mishkan itself. And now when you do that, so it's going to be, you're going to have a 20 amos space in each direction. Behind it to the west, to the north, to the south, you're going to have 20 amos of space in each of those directions. That is a simple pshat in the pasuk. Good. That kind of takes us now to the end of a little bit of clarification of Shitas Rabbi Akiva in terms of the area allowable to carry when it's non-residential upwards to 5,000 square amas, or to more accurately stated right now, according to Rabbi Akiva, 72/3 by 72/3 as being your area, even if it is totally non-residential. And that goes against the Shita of Rav Yehuda Mababa, that goes against the Shita of Rav Yehuda. And as we will become clear in just a moment, the halacha is going to follow like Rabbi Kiva. Rabbi Eliezer Arim Haisa Arka. But before we get to that point of clarification and Psak, we're going to now move on to the next part of the Mishnah, the second part of the Mishnah, which talks about the shape of the Karpov. And what seemingly we have in the Mishnah is a simple machlokas between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yossi, in terms of whether or not it has to have a certain shape. And Rabbi Eliezer says it has to be a square, and Rabbi Yossi says it can be rectangular. Parenthetically, by the way, the sheet of Rabbi Yossi is much easier to defend. Meaning, where are we learning about the area of the Chatzer Mishkan? We're learning it from the Mishkan. Sorry, let me say that better. Where are we learning about the area of the Karpov? We're learning it from the Chatzer Mishkan. What was the shape of the Chatzer Mishkan? So it was rectangular. It was 50 by 100. So it is certainly easier to support the sheet of Rabbi Yossi. Nevertheless, Rabbi Eliezer in our Mishnah, as it is presented, says that it has to be square. Okay. Now the Gemara says, I'll tell you the problem. We have a brisa. V'hatanya. Rabbi Eliezer, mi mihaisa arka yeso pishnayim, berachva afilo ama achas, ein metalta mesocha. Now the brisa over here says that Shitas Rabbi Eliezer says it can be rectangular. Now obviously it's a problem because our Mishnah says that Rabbi Eliezer says it has to be a square. That's a problem. And on top of that, in the brisa we just learned together, it could be a rectangular according to Rabbi Eliezer, but it simply cannot be, it cannot exceed, the length cannot exceed the width by any more than 2x. So that means to say that there's a it's rectangular, but with a limit. Now, the problem, of course, is that that's not Rabbi Eliezer of our Mishnah. So Amar of Bibi Bar Abaye, Ki Tananami Masisin, Yes, Al Pishnayim, Berechva Tanan. So the Gemara says, okay, so what we're going to do in order to create agreement between the Mishnah and the Braisa is we're going to edit the Mishnah. It's certainly interesting that of the things that are going to give, so to say, so the solution the Gemara is giving is the editing of the Mishnah. Generally speaking, one would think that the Mishnah is going to have more significance, it's more correct. And if anything is going to give, the Brisa is going to give instead of the Mishnah. Okay, but apparently the Gemara had a Masorah that the Brisa is absolutely correct, and therefore it's going to force us to edit the Mishnah. So Ihachi Haina Rabbi Yossi, the Gemara says, great, we edited the Mishnah, and now what we have over here is Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yossi agreeing that the Karpov can be rectangular. So the Gemara says, Zikamanao Rivua de Rivua Rabbanan. So the Gemara says, okay, you're right. They agree, but there still is going to be a subtle difference between them. And that is there a preference to make it square? Meaning the Karpov can be rectangular, but is there any preference to make it square? And Shitas Rabbi Eliezer's position is, yes, there is a preference to make it square. But if it's rectangular, it's okay. Whereas opposed to the sheet of Rav Yossi, is that it's perfectly allowable for the Karpov to be rectangular in shape. Rav Yossi, Omer Itmar. The Gemara continues, Amar Rav Yosef, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Alachik Rav Yossi. And so now the Gemara is paskening. And so first of all, the Gemara quotes B'Shem Shmuel, that the Alachik falls like Rav Yossi, in that in terms of the shape, it can be rectangular. And there's no need to make it square in shape. It can absolutely be rectangular in shape. And additionally, Rabibi, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Alachik Rabbi Kiva. And on top of that, also, in terms of the restrictions of the Karpov, does it have to have any kind of residence inside of it? Does it need the Shomira? Does it need to be carved the ear? So the Gemara says, the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva, meaning the answer to all the above is no. It does not have to have any kind of residence in it whatsoever. It would be sufficient if it were just simply a totally non-residential area, but again, with the cap that, with the limitation that it can't be greater than 5,000 square amas. Vitar vayilakula. Now, these two psakim that came to us through Shmuel, so they both represent lenient positions. Utsricha, now the Gemara says they're necessary. Because if I only had the shita of Rabbi Yossi, I might have thought, okay, Rabbi Yossi is just talking about the shape, because that was the second section of the Mishnah. So fine, the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi, that there's no restriction in terms of the shape. But I might have thought that in terms of residence, maybe he agrees with Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. It needs a shomira, it needs a beis dira. So kamashmalan halacha ki Rabbi Akiva. That's why the psak of Shmuel is that we pass like Rabbi Akiva. It doesn't have to have anything inside. It could be totally non-residential. Now, if we said the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva, avamina darach v'katin lo. So I might have thought that it can't be rectangular. Meaning, yes, Rabbi Akiva is relaxed in terms of it doesn't have to have any kind of residential purpose. On the other hand, maybe Rabbi Akiva is makbid about the shape. So that's why kamash malan halacha ki Rabbi Yossi. That's why he says the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi, in order to clearly indicate that shape is also not significant. It can be square, it could also be rectangular. So the Gemara now has clearly paskin on the two parts of the Mishnah in terms of leniency. In terms of, does it have to have any kind of residential purpose? The answer is no. We paskin like Rabbi Akiva. Is there any regulation in terms of the shape of the karpuf? The answer to that is no as well. It could be square, it could also be rectangular in nature. We're continuing the Gemara. We're going to start the discussion here now. But truth of the matter is that this discussion is going to take us into tomorrow's daf. But let's at least begin the discussion right now. Karpuf shu yosemi beis asayim. Shukof ladira. So I have a karpuf. I have this enclosure. It's larger than a beis asayim, but it was zoned residential. So that means to say now that it can be larger than a beis asayim. And now with the discussion that we're going to have in the Gemara is as follows. Can we rezone an area? So after it has been enclosed for residential purposes, can it now be rezoned? Okay, now, in terms of rezoning, this is not my area of expertise to say the least. But here, in our country, so you could rezone just by simply filing for rezoning. And now, it's, you know, where the government could just simply say, okay, it's rezoned. But over here, our discussion about rezoning is going to be based on the fact that we actually are going to be changing the landscape. What do I mean by that? So you'll see right now. So it was hukaf ladira, so it was zoned as residential, and nizra rubo. Harei kugina ve'asar. And then what we did is we planted. And specifically the word zera, meaning that basically we turned it into a garden. We planted all these seeds in it. You can't even walk inside of it. So now we took this residential area and we converted it to a non-residential area. Okay, now you convert it to a non-residential area, so now you have to work with what we learned on our Mishnah. If I have a non-residential area and it exceeds 5,000 square amas, so you can't carry in that area. It's rabbinically prohibited to do so. Fine. So we just learned together that it can be converted from residential to non-residential if you basically plant seeds in it and nobody can walk in it anymore, and now it becomes non-residential, and because in this case it exceeded 5,000 square amas, you can't carry in that area. Nata rubo hare kechatzer mutter, but let's say you're a noteya, which means you planted trees. Okay, so now planting trees is not a problem. You can still walk around the area. So planting trees does not turn it from a residential to a non-residential area, and therefore it's still mutter. Okay, the second statement is pretty straightforward. The first statement, however, needs clarification, because in the first statement it was nizra rubo. The majority of it was nizra. And now, what case are we describing over here when we say the majority of it? Meaning, here's what we know. The entire enclosure was greater than a beis asayim. We also know that the majority of it now has plants in it, making it difficult to walk around it. To walk over it. But when we say rove, what exactly do we mean by that? The Gemara is going to give three suggestions. Let's start. I'm Rav Huna Bereid, Rav Yeshua, Lo Amarin Ela Yosem Beis Asayim. So how much of it was planted? How much of it was Nizra? So the Gemara starts off with the Shita of Rav Huna, Bereid Rav Yeshua, and that is, it has to be that you planted more than a Beis HaSayim. Ava Beis HaSayim Mutter. But let's say we have the following. Let's say we have this large enclosure, and within this large enclosure, let's say, for argument's sake, let's say that's three sa. So this large enclosure of three sa, so of the three sa, two sa, meaning 5,000 square amas, so that area was nizra, it was planted, making that area, that patch, going to be no longer a residential area. So what the Gemara now is going to try to argue is that under those circumstances, it's going to be fine. It's only when the amount that was planted exceeds a Beis HaSaim, then and only then is the entire area going to be Aser. Now, how is the Gemara trying to argue this? So the Gemara explains, Keman Karebi Shimon. So for here, in terms of arguing the point, so we're going to employ the position of Rabbi Shimon. This position of Rabbi Shimon we saw not so long ago. Back in the 19th parak of Shabbos, when discussing Rabbi Lazar de Mila and carrying the knife around on Shabbos, so we were introduced to the Shita Rabbi Shimon, and we're going to see him a number of times over here in our Masechta. A number of times. And the Shita Rabbi Shimon is as follows. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Echad Gagos, Ve'echad Chatzeros, Ve'echad Karpifos. Rishus achas hein lekelim sheshavta besochan, v'lo lekelim sheshavta besocha bayis. What Rabbi Shimon allows us to do is the following. If I look at any enclosure that's not a house, the rooftop, the front courtyard, the back lot, any enclosure that's not a house, so what Rabbi Shimon says is that the way we can view them halachically is that they're basically all the same, even though they're not exactly the same, but halacha allows me to view them as all the same. And so therefore, on Shabbos, for any kli that starts off on Shabbos in the Gag, and right next to the Gag, contiguous to the Gag, there's a chatzer, so I'm allowed to carry from the Gag to the chatzer, even though they're different reshuyos. But Rabbi Shimon says we have to look at them as them being all the same, and I can carry from the chatzer to the karpuf, etc., etc. That cheats Rabbi Shimon. What the Gemara is trying to argue over here is the following: that when I have this large enclosure where a good chunk of it is now planted with seeds. And when I say a good chunk, I mean the majority of it is planted with seeds. And another section of it, a minority, is still open and traversable. So under those circumstances, using now Rabbi Shimon, so basically I don't have to prohibit this area. Because even though status-wise there are two different areas, but using Shita's Rabbi Shimon, where the Chatzar and the Gag and the Karpov can all be viewed as one, so here too as well, according to Rabbi Shimon, we can view these two areas as one area. And that allows now for the carrying within that area. So the Gemara says, that's interesting, and I don't understand, says the Gemara, how you could use Rabbi Shimon over here. The Rabbi Shimon Nami, Kevin de Nizra Rubo, Havi Eumita Miuta, Batole Lagabe Rubo, Vahavale Karfaf, Yosemi Besasayim, Vasar. So the Gemara says, this is where I'm lost, because look at what we're looking at over here. An enclosure that's larger than a Besasayim. We'll stick with my numbers. It's three sa'a in total, and of those three sa'a, two sa'a now are planted. And that two sa'a now are planted obviously represents a majority. So when I have one enclosure where the majority of the area inside is non-residential, so we're going to operate with what we know is the tried and true rules of Rov. We're going to operate with majority. Majority dictates that in terms of the status of in any area, whatever the majority is, that's what's going to define it. Over here, if the majority of the area is non-residential, so the entire area now is deemed to be non-residential. You can't use Reshita's Rabbi Shimon to explain the position over here because it's not analogous. Rabbi Shimon was talking about carrying from a chatzer to a gag, from a gag to a karpuf. Over here, we're within the same enclosure. How do I define one enclosure? We're going to follow Rov. And if the majority of it is non-residential, the entire area is non-residential. So the Gemara says, so I don't think using Rabbi Shimon would allow us to work in this scenario over here. The Gemara is therefore going to try to give a couple of other suggestions of what the case is under discussion. And this is where we're going to stop, and we'll continue tomorrow on the top of Chavdala. Let's recap our daf today. Our first discussion today was regarding the Mishnah, regarding a bor, a pit, in which the Mishnah says, the Pase Beiraus, it's the last Mishnah of Pase Beiraus, in which there has to be a water source. And within that water source, so we had a Machlokas Tanayim in terms of what would allow me to carry in the area of the Pase Beiraus. Shitas Rabbi Akiva in the Mishnah, I just simply need one thing working for me, meaning it could be a Be'er as opposed to Bor, or it could be shel rabim as opposed to shel yachid. As long as I have one thing working for me, so then the pasuk beros are effective, and I can carry in that area. Whereas shitas Rav Yehuda ben Bava is that no. In order to be able to carry within the pasuk beros, it has to be a be'er, and it has to be shel rabim. And what the Gemara did is just simply articulate those points, that those are both critical points according to shitas Rav Yehuda ben Bava, and the Gemara says, in fact, we paskin like Rav Yehuda ben Bava on that topic. We move then to the Mishnah on Chav Gimel Amud Aleph regarding a karpaf. A karpaf is typically viewed as a non-residential area, and the limits where I can only carry within the karpaf only when it is up to a base asayim. Right, that area, by the way, we express in so many different ways. We call it a base asayim, or we can call it 5,000 square amas, or we can call it 72/3 by 72/3. And as we noted, there are subtle differences in terms of the actual area, but we express it in many different ways. In order to be able to carry within the karpaf, so does it have to have any kind of residential use whatsoever? Machlok is in the Mishnayos between three Tanayim. Rav Yehuda ben Bava says that it has to have a guardhouse, or an actual house, or it has to be proximate to the city. Then and only then can I carry in that area. If I don't have any of that, I cannot carry that in that area if it exceeds more than a base assign. Shitas Rav Yehuda is that it has to have a pit, presumably with water in it. Shitas Rabbi Kiva is that the non-residential area does not have to have anything in it. It could be totally non-residential, and yet, up to a base assign, one is allowed to carry in that area. Greater than a base assign, one is not allowed to carry in that area. Rabbi Kiva represents the most lenient of the positions. The next topic of discussion in the Mishnah was the shape of the karpov. Is there a hakpada on the shape? So Rabbi Eliezer says yes. Rabbi Yossi says no. It can even be rectangular in shape. And then the third was a number of comments that were heard from Rabbi Eliezer, reported by Rabbi Eli. The first one having to do with our topic of karpov, where he heard Rabbi Eliezer say there's no limit. You can even make the area a non-residential area as large as a core, and yet you are allowed to carry in that area. And two other things not related to our discussion. The second one was still an Erevin topic. What becomes of the person who does not contribute to the Erev? And is Mevatos Rishus, what can be carried from his house into the Chatzer? So Rabbi Eliezer says, makes a point that's controversial, and we're going to go over that later in the Masechta. And the third having to do with Marer, a specific species of Marer where he heard Rabbi Eliezer say it's okay, even though it's not one of the five mentioned in that Mishnah Psachim. The Gemara tackled the word va'od of our Mishnah, a technical discussion. Our Mishnah introduced Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava with the word va'od, understandably, because it goes right after Mishnah, where it introduced Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. Are the Mishnayos always consistent about using the word va'od when stringing together Mishnayos? The answer is no. And why? And that's what the Gemara tried to tackle. And then the subtle difference between Shitas Rabbi Akiva and the Shita that was expressed earlier in our perek. Rabbi Kiva says that a karpov cannot exceed a shivim by shirayim by shivim by shirayim, 72/3 squared. Wasn't that already articulated by the Amru Lo of the earlier Mishnayos in our perek? The Gemara says, yeah, but with a subtle difference. Rabbi Kiva puts the cap at 72/3 by 72/3, which is comes out to 4,993 square amos, a shade less than a base asayim, which is 5,000 square amos. Okay, how do Rabbi Kiva arrive at 72/3 by 72/3? So the Gemara has an interesting drasha that got us to that point when the Torah describes the dimensions of the Chatzer HaMishkan, which is 50 by 100. So the strange language of Chamishim b'Chamishim and the Gemara's reconfiguration in order to get us to 72/3 and 72/3. And then the Gemara gave the pshat, the simple pshat in that pasuk in terms of where to put the actual Mishkan within the Chatzer HaMishkan. Then the Gemara Paskin, like Shitas Rabbi Kiva, that a non-residential area can be totally non-residential, and as long as this is within a base assign, Shivim, 72/3 with 72/3, so you can carry that area. Once it exceeds that, so then you can't carry. So the first point is that the halacha falls like Rabbi Kiva, and then the Gemara says the halacha also falls like Rabbi Yossi, in that there is no hakpada regarding the shape of the karpa. And then finally, we talked about rezoning. We started the discussion where I took an area that was enclosed for residential purposes. I planted in the majority of that area, making that part now non-traversable. So it's now become rezoned. If I just planted trees, that's not a big deal because people could still navigate through the trees, around the trees. But if you planted seeds, So now you can't carry in that area, you can't walk in that area, and now it rezoned it. And what we're trying to do now is just simply come to a pshat, because the statement was Nizra Rubo. If the majority of it becomes non-residential, what exactly is the case? So we offered a suggestion where the majority was non-residential, minority was residential. So the Gemara says, I don't like that case, because if the majority is non-residential, the whole area becomes non-residential. So the Gemara says, okay, scratch that. And where we leave ourselves off for tomorrow morning is to try to figure out what would be the scenario in which the case of Nizra Rubo is actually talking about.